Hi guys, this is Christina. I edit Sarah's podcast, and if you aren't following the That Creative Life Twitter account, you are missing out. It's linked below, so go follow at That CRTV Life, L-I-F-E, for funny memes about living that creative life. Enjoy this episode where Sarah chats with Bob, one of the Razer marketing executives at CES 2020.
Welcome to That Creative Life. Hi, my name is Sarah Dici, and I am your host. I talk with artists, YouTubers, CEOs, and everyone in between. I hope this podcast helps you live your best creative life. Enjoy.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of That Creative Life. I am here with Bob, who is the VP of Sales and Marketing for Razer and also the General Manager for North America. So we're here at CES. It's a little loud, but we have some decent mics. Hopefully you'll be able to hear us. So Bob, if you can kind of give some context to the people about your role at Razer, and then we'll kind of hop into your journey, how you got here and how it affects Razer.
Great. So Sarah, Razer is organized somewhat like a lot of technology companies, where there's executives that are responsible for developing lines of product, and they have that responsibility worldwide. And then you have people like myself who are responsible for a region. So in the case of Bob, Bob's responsible for the Americas for Razer. So anything that Razer does in the Americas is my responsibility, particularly sales and marketing, engaging with consumers, running campaigns, making sure that we've got great customer support and good post-sale support, managing all of our channel partners.
Which sounds, that's a big job, right? So I'm a YouTuber. I do a lot of things that has to do with marketing other products for companies, right? With influencer marketing. And it's always so intriguing for me to get an inside look onto how companies kind of segment their marketing and how they want to get their products out there and how they handle all of these events. So just for starters, can you give a little context in the marketing side of things and how you're looking at it in 2020? Like, how do you break that down? So of course there's influencer marketing, there's events, there's so many things. And being the head of that, I imagine, is a lot. Where do you even begin?
Oh,
you want to get your products out there. You know, where do you start?
it's really kind of simple at the end of the day, if you boil it down. You've got your products that are sustaining, that are out there, that people are buying every day, and they're in the middle of their product life cycle. So in that case, we've got a whole engine of how do we authentically engage with our consumers, with our customers, to make sure they've got a great experience, that we're taking care of them, that they continue to know of product availability and things like that. Then we've got new products, and the new products can fall under two categories. It could be new products that are related to the businesses we're already in, like keyboards, mice, headsets, laptops, or it could be new products that are in new categories for Razer that Razer doesn't particularly participate in or previously participate in. So what we do is we go and we do a full annual plan, and we look at what are the activities we're doing to sustain, what are the activities we're going to do to launch new products, and what are the activities we're going to do to launch new categories and really penetrate new businesses. And all three of those are a lot of fun. And we need to make sure that we do it in a way that's very authentic and very in tune with the way Razer engages with its customers, and that we set expectations appropriately, and we really make sure our customer knows they're the center of our universe.
Mm-hmm. How has that shifted from starting at Razer? Because I know you were in some of the first 10 employees, the first 20? Because you were here in the beginning, correct?
It wasn't really the beginning. Okay. I joined in 2015. Okay. For a couple of years. Gotcha. And then I got lured away to do a couple startups, which I went and did. did. And it was interesting because I fell in love. So a little bit of how I came across Razer. I've been a gamer my entire life. Imagine way before you were born. Buying a PC when I was working at Hewlett Packard, buying a corporate PC, and then going to Fry's and finding a graphics card so I could play games. My first game was a game called Harpoon, where you would load in 10 floppy disks, five and a quarter floppy disks. And so I've been gaming my whole life. And I left HP to go do a startup that was called Music Match, and it's basically what Spotify, iTunes, and Pandora is today. We invented all those things.
Wow. Was it the technology behind it, or was it more of a...
It was really the user interface, okay. The software, the services, a lot of usability about how does a user interact with music, how is the personalization done. So what I loved about that job, that was my first startup. So I went from working at huge Hewlett Packard to working at this little startup, and I went from being able to get the senior vice president of merchandising at Best Buy to call me back in 10 minutes to arguing and trying to get the assistant software buyer at Best Buy to call me back in 2 weeks.
Different challenges.
It was amazing. Yeah. And it was such a human capital building experience. You can't believe it. But what I loved about that job was, aside from learning life in a startup, it was also involving technology, hardware, mixing with content. And that's ultimately how I found myself to Razer originally. When I did a couple other career moves, but when I was living over in Europe running Kodak's European consumer business, and I came back to the U.S.
And what year was that?
That was in 2013. I came back, and then I worked on another startup for a little bit, but in 2015, I was looking for a great match. Razer is a technology company that makes hardware, but it's also heavily entwined with content, video gaming. And it was right up my alley, very similar to what I loved about Music Match, music and hardware and technology, very similar. So I came to Razer in 2015, and essentially the same position. And I built a great team. We moved our office, enjoyed working on the culture. I really got to know Razer, and I've owned Razer products, so I was already in love with the brand. Changed my wardrobe to black and green.
You have to, right?
and the coolest thing was my kids just thought I was the bomb. And my kids are gamers, and their friends are gamers.
Yeah. You can see, look at those gamers using Razer products.
Exactly.
What I had to do with that?
Oh my God, it was amazing. And so I would like, we had this great employee purchase program. So I'd buy product, and then I would, like, my kids, when they were giving gifts for their friends, they'd give them Razer products. And so that was amazing.
Wow. Good friends.
But I had three kids at the time.
Yeah.
And Razer is all consuming. Like, because I love video games and I love doing what I do and I love the brand, it's really hard to not throw your whole self at it. So when I took a break from Razer to go do these startups, which were really fun, I really missed it. And one of the startups I did was a medical device startup that was completely out of my wheelhouse. And so I used a lot of the knowledge that I had in terms of supply chain and choosing PR agencies and advertising agencies to really build the infrastructure up for that company. I helped them raise money, and the company's still doing really well, but they make a medical device that solves chronic pain problems without opioids. And so for that 1 year I was doing that, I was a hero to with my mother and all her friends. Not as cool as being a hero, like, to your gaming kids.
But still,
it was really good.
Yeah.
And then Min reached out to me and asked me to come back to Razer, and wanted to take the Americas to the next level, really, really improve and grow the company, grow the business. And I had just really wrapped up with that startup, and so I met with him at CES a year ago, and I've been back for about a year.
Oh, wow. So what are some of the things that you learned and gained from startups that now affects Razer and how you operate here?
Yeah, so a couple of things. Probably the most important thing is ownership. Like, in a startup, you own everything. It's the difference between success and failure is the individual. And then to the next level, it's the team. And so when I came back to Razer, Razer already had that kind of individuals make a difference and teams make a different culture. But I've been really working on taking that to the next level, because it's such an important part of the Razer culture. And the U.S. team, you know, we're just trying to be the best in all of the regions. So that is one of the things that I really learned from working at a startup. Second thing is taking risks. In a startup, if you play it safe, you're dead. And so moving quick, taking risks, making decisions, that's a skill set that you need in a startup. And I practice that every day at Razer. I encourage people to make mistakes and take risks, stick their neck out. And we learn and we iterate a lot of that.
So how do you encourage that? Do you have certain things in place that reward people for that? Or, 'cause I guess it's easy to say that, but then once you're in, you know, layers of management, it might be hard to actually act on that. Like, how do you encourage that?
It's really, honestly, I think some people and some companies can do a good job at orchestrating a formal program, but it's really built in the overall Razer culture of taking risks, and so it's really a personal leadership thing. So when one of my team members takes a risk and they succeed, that's instant positive reinforcement, and you don't really need to do much except celebrate. But it's really when they take a risk and fail, that's when leadership is really important. You have to come in and you have to say, hey, let's talk about what happened. I'm so proud of you for taking a risk there. That was a bold move, and it was a calculated risk. It was the right thing to do. And so you celebrate the learning, and then you walk away, and then hopefully that person doesn't get dinged and knows that they can take a risk the next time around.
Right, yeah. So a lot of my audience are creators, are people in agencies, kind of in the creative world, but they're still trying to build, and maybe they work with other people, other freelancers, and something that's a big challenge that I'm going through right now is hiring and simultaneously being a doer, but also being a boss.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult when you're used to just being hunkering down, editing for 12 hours a day, right? And so I imagine in startups as well, it probably is more just like, go for it. Maybe you're not, you know, in touch with your boss every single day. So what do you think is maybe some things that you learned from, you know, startup culture that could maybe apply to individual creators or people trying to build smaller businesses in terms of, I know managing people, it's not a sexy thing to talk about, but I'm so curious about it right now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, two people who are smaller, right? And they're hiring their first, editor or their first social media person. Maybe it's a gamer who wants to level it up and they now have, they have money to spend on people. How just any advice to people like that?
So first of all, it's really important as a leader to know what it is you're trying to do. And it's important to know what your strengths and weaknesses are. And so I tend to look for people who I relate to, who I can trust, but also aren't exactly like me, that have a different skill set. And so that's kind of point number one. Point number two is it's really important to put an intellectual context around what you're doing. Like, one of the things that we've just been working on since I came back at is getting Razor into a clear number one market leadership position. So I talk about that all the time with my staff. We have a lot of other goals too, but we have that singular focus where we're gonna be number one and we're gonna win. So making sure that the team that you work with, whether it's contractors, whether it's employees, whether it's partners, that they understand what's important to you and what it is. And then I like learned a long time ago that you need to work with people the way they need to be worked with. So some people can work for 2 days without a check-in, or work for a week without a check-in, and some people need more frequent
check-in.
Everyone's
different, yeah.
Yeah, and so you just have to bend. And in a startup, when you don't have a lot of extra bandwidth, sometimes you have to realize, hey, that person's not compatible with the way I need to work in a startup. That might be a great person if I'm in a big company, but sometimes and so you have to be willing to change that out quickly and be honest with people that, hey, this isn't working, and we need to work together in a different way.
Yeah. So what were your biggest challenges in 2015 and now in 2020 in the context of Razor? Because I know Razor's pretty ambitious. I mean, you guys make a lot of cool products, and I imagine that the business has changed a little bit in 5 years,
yeah.
Right?
Well, it's interesting. In 2015, to set a little bit of the table here, in 2015, the peripherals business, keyboards, mice, and headset, we call it peripherals, was really, was doing well, and it just needed to, to be cultivated and continuous improvement. But what was new for Razor was our laptop business at the time. And I love our laptops. I had gone through my history of, I was a Mac guy for a while, PC guy for a while, Mac guy, PC guy. And when Min decided that he was going to make a gaming laptop that fit in the body of a thin and light, Mac, that was a game changer. Now, when we started that, we didn't know how to really do customer support. We didn't know how to communicate the value proposition. We didn't have partners on board. It's very
ambitious to say that, yeah, and then execute.
It's very different. And so one of the parts, and even our supply chain, they didn't, we were so careful, because there's so, when you're making a product that's several thousand dollars of cost, you have to be so careful, and you can't have a lot of scrap, you can't have a lot of leftovers. So the entire business on how we needed to bring this innovative, game-changing laptop to market was my favorite challenge. And we figured out how to work with Microsoft stores and Amazon and Best Buy, and work with them in a way that works for them and it worked for us. We spent a lot of time on customer support, and early on we stumbled a lot with customer support. And when I came back in February of last year, one of the presents I saw was we were recognized by Laptop Magazine as having the number two customer support in all of the laptops, right after Apple. So we're and we're gaining on them too.
Yeah.
So we went from having to figure all this stuff out, which was an amazing, cool set of challenges to now I came back and I saw our laptop business, you know, we're 60% of the market for laptops over gaming laptops over $2,000. And we're now just broadening out with laptops for creators. And that product, you know, it's one SKU, one product, and it's just, it's selling really well. And it's just, we've hit the nail on the head. So getting a chance to be part of the beginning of the laptop business and then getting it going and then coming back and seeing how strong it is, that's been one of the most exciting things of coming back to Razer.
Yeah, it was cool to see at Computex all of the NVIDIA Studio project, you know, coming out with all the creator-focused laptops and the creator-focused drivers, because I'm a YouTuber and I do tech, I've been very adjacent to gaming, but I've always been a creator focus. I love telling stories. It's more about, you know, how does tech fit into a filmmaker's life, designers, photographers? And there's still, honestly, a gap. And with, you know, I was a big MacBook user from 2012 to 2016, and the recent things that they've done, I think a lot of creators are just asking why. And so what do you see going into 2020, what are some things that are maybe to look for creators? Is Razer paying more attention? Do they have, you know, do you guys have your sights on more products that are just outside of laptops for creators? Are you interested in that market?
Oh, we're totally interested in it. In fact,
because we're here.
Yeah.
We'll buy it.
Well, it's an amazing, creators are like hardcore gamers in that they push the cutting edge of the hardware and the software. They're innovators. They're the peak of a very special iceberg, if you will. You know that they're leading the way in things, and it's very similar to gamers. So I think our approach with creators is a natural relationship, like coming from gaming. But one of the things, can I tell you like a cute little story?
Yeah,
like
of course, going back? Yeah.
So our first creator product, you'll never guess what it is. But this kind of goes a little bit back to Min and innovation at Razer. So remember back in the days where your phone only had a keypad on it, didn't have a screen or a big screen, and you have to text by clicking the two, three times
T9 texting.
Click.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Min used to drive around in his car, and he used to text with one hand on his phone, and he was so good at it that he could text without looking at the screen. And it had the little key, and he would hold it with the keypad on the side. So then going and playing World of Warcraft and stuff like that, where you have all these different menu items, and the gamer was taking time to pull down menus and create stuff. So we put this idea together and came up with a mouse with a keypad on the side, and that's called the Naga.
Yeah.
The Naga is one of the best-selling gaming mice of all time, and probably, if you go grab anyone off the street and they say, "What's a gaming mouse?" they'll point to the Naga because it was the first gaming mouse that actually had all that the keypad. And then what you could do with the keypad on the side is you could, with our Synapse software, which makes our products magical, you could program all the keys to be whatever you want. So we started getting customer support calls from people, and they were asking, "Hey, how do you do this and how do you do that?" And we're like, "Oh, well, you do this and that." And so we're like, "Well, what game are you using?" They're like, "Oh no, I'm not doing game. I'm doing Photoshop." So what the creators were doing is they were buying the Naga mouse and they were doing macros and pulling up layers by just grabbing a button and saving all of the pull down and the keystrokes. And so that was really how that was the first time we went from gaming to creators. And so after gaming, the number one vertical for the Naga Mouse are creators. So when we were looking at at laptops, and once the one thing about that we learned about creators aren't just creative in their work, they're creative in their life. They have a vision of who they are, where they want to be, what they want to build, and they want to communicate that. So if you have a junky old laptop, that's
not inspiring,
it doesn't fit
right
into the notion of what a creator really is. And so when we like made a Windows gaming laptop into that beautiful carved single piece of aluminum, we're good enough to meet the standards of a creator where most gaming laptops in history weren't. And so when we did that, that was a big breakthrough. And so so now with putting in a real set of creator GPU, we're able to really satisfy the needs. And the screen, the OLED 4K screen, so we're getting more and more into the heads of the creator. So we've leapt from that natural synergy, that natural crossover, and we're now going deep and saying, what are the real deep and true things that a creator needs with a laptop?
Okay, so if I can be selfish for a little bit and ask you about Kodak.
About what?
You said you worked for Kodak.
I did,
for a
yeah.
little. So how long did you work for them?
I was recruited from Kodak by a bunch of my mentors at Hewlett-Packard who were going to go try to turn Kodak around.
Yeah, okay, because I'm so curious.
Yeah.
Because I love film. I got, like, my grandpa got me into film photography with his old Leica and stuff. And, you know, he was telling me how, like, he stopped shooting pictures once you couldn't develop Kodachrome anymore. Like, he was so furious that he just stopped. It's not super practical for what I do, but it's kind of just a hobby, right? So I'm very curious about that company specifically, because last year at CES, 2 years ago, was the first time that they showed off the Super 16 that, they had a whole process of sending in the film, and it was this cool, modern-looking film camera, and they were trying to make these things new again. And it was so intriguing, but I'll ask you the same question. What was the biggest challenge there? Because they are such a company of their glory days, you know, are kind of in the past. And so I imagine that would be an interesting place to work and a challenge.
Yeah, so I have to give you the context of how I got to Kodak. So a bunch of my mentors at HP were there, and I was at Yahoo at the time. Music startup was purchased by Yahoo, and I was the head of business development for Yahoo Music. And a bunch of my old HP mentors asked me to come back and go to Kodak and help launch a new digital printing business at Kodak. And so, to answer the question, so I was the global marketing VP for this startup division where we were making an inkjet printer.
Yeah.
That was.
Oh, I remember. I mean,
you remember
the
cheap ink
everywhere.
And,
yeah. Yes.
Yeah. In fact, best marketing I've ever done.
Really?
You know, well, yet because we're gonna have a great year at Razer this year, but what we did was we had to basically go to the marketplace and say, you're not buying printers right. You're buying the printer for cheap and you're paying a lot for the ink. Well, for the person who prints a lot, that's a terrible business model. That's like saying if you're an airline, your best passengers pay more versus pay less. So what we had to go do is we had to go completely teach the consumer how to buy differently. But from an internal standpoint, the biggest challenge was getting the people at Kodak who are used to being market leaders to think of themselves as a challenger, because we're going after this new market. We're going after HP, Lexmark, Epson, and the instincts of the whole company were leadership instincts, and what we needed were challenger instincts. So we had to go, you know, get an agency that could think like a challenger. We had to talk about, we had to teach teach the internal marketing structure and the sales structure how to act as a challenger. You can't just go in and say, here's our new yellow box. You have to cultivate it. And so that was really a cool experience.
What was some of the creative that you did to enforce all of, you know, the customers to think differently? Was it TV ads? What did your Instagram spots look like?
It was everything. Yeah. It was social media, and it was TV, it was radio. PR was a huge thing. We had like 60% of share of voice of global PR when we had like 3% market share. So it was a really big thing. But the thing that was absolutely was absolutely amazing about it was the fact that for the first time in my career, I could do marketing that appealed to the consumer's emotion. Whereas HP and Yahoo didn't have the license to go to emotion, whereas Kodak did. So when HP would go to try to appeal to emotion, they looked kind of awkward because it's a nerdy, logical company. But Kodak had that soul. Yeah. And so when I left Kodak and I came to Razer, Razer actually has that. That Razer is a technology company. We talk a lot about our technology, but really what we are, we're gamers who are making products for other gamers. And so we have that same license that Kodak has to tap into nostalgia. Razer brand has that license to show that we care, that we understand, that we love our consumers, we love gaming. And that was one of the neat things going from Kodak to Razer that I really enjoyed.
That's awesome. That's very cool. Amazing. Any final thoughts that you just need to put out into the world?
Yeah, well, I love what you're doing, and I love the message you're trying to get out. And really, you know, aside from the obvious one, which is overly commercial, which is if you're a creator, check out our stuff. But the more important thing is be persistent, trust yourself, trust in your art, trust in your instincts, and learn how to collaborate with people, and believe in yourself, and don't be afraid to fail, because great people always succeed.
That's awesome. Amazing. Thank you so much, Bob, for being on. Everyone who's listening, make sure you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, every single Monday at 7 a.m. Thanks for joining, and I'll see you in the next one.